Good morning. Today's daf in Ksufas and Sadi. We are on Pei Tes Amud Beis. We're starting at the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. Ninth parak has been dedicated to pretty much one topic, and that is debt collection. Primarily, we've been discussing the Ksuva. Ksuva is a note of indebtedness. It's a strange note of indebtedness, as we pointed out numerous times. It doesn't reflect an actual transaction. In other words, a man marries a woman, and by virtue of the fact that the Torah slash the Chachamim instituted that he has to write a ksuva, so that means that he indebts himself to her. Upon death or divorce, he has to pay her. And so we've been spending a lot of time in this parak talking about the actual collection of debt. And it obviously has ramifications towards regular debt collection as well. So numerous times over the course of this parak, so we basically compared, contrasted debt collection of a ksuva, debt collection of a normal debt. The Mishnah now, Shtegitim, we are on the last Mishnah. The last Mishnah here in the ninth parak. So sorry, I'll check that and I'll correct myself. Second to last Mishnah of this parak, Shnegitin. So here we are now starting on the bottom of the Amud. Shnegitin v'shnei ksuvos. So what happens is as follows. She has two gets and she has two ksuvos. How does she have two gets and two ksuvos? It's very simple. And it's all from one man. So the answer actually is very simple. Yep, she does. In other words, what happens is that he married her, he divorced her, he married her again. Right, machzer grushaso. There's machzer grushaso good and machzer grushaso bad. So let's go over machzer grushaso good. Machzer grushaso good is that a man marries a woman, they get divorced, and he marries her again. They try for a second time to make the marriage work. And so that's machzer grushaso good. Good meaning that not only is it nice, it's a nice story that they're trying again, but good meaning it's totally, it's perfectly okay. It's mutter. You may, as long as he's not a Kohen, that's an excellent correction. So the, and it may be called a mitzvah. Okay, that's kind of a debatable point, but doesn't matter. In other words, it's perfectly legitimate. There's machzer grushaso, which is bad, which is mishinisis la'acher. When she marries somebody else in the interim, so then once she marries somebody else in the interim, she cannot go back to her original husband, and that is an iser gamur, that's a law in the Torah. In fact, the Torah uses extraordinarily strong language to describe what happens when you remarry a divorcee, your divorcee, after she married another man. The Torah describes this toevahi. The Torah has extraordinarily strong language for such a machzer grushaso. We're not talking about that. In our Mishnah, we're talking about a good machzer grushaso, i.e. you divorced her and then you married her again. And what did you do? So you wrote her a second ksuva. Now, the question begs, which is the following. We're assuming, of course, that you haven't paid your first ksuva yet. And maybe, and I say this, you know, with a half smile, maybe it's that ksuva payment that, which is daunting, which basically got you a little bit more incentivized to, you know what, let's try it again. Let's get married again. That ksuva is really a lot. So anyway, but regardless of the motivation. So he wrote her a second ksuva. So now, what is the relationship of the first ksuva and the second ksuva? Right, there is no way that he's going to owe her twice. Now, I say that, by the way, and I know the Gemara upcoming. But but there's no way he's going to owe her twice, meaning the ksuva that he writes the second time is what? It's just a resumption of the ksuva that he wrote the first time. Well, why don't we just simply recycle the first ksuva, right? Why are you writing a second ksuva? So the Mishnah tells us that shnei gittim shnei ksuva. So there's shnei gittim shnei ksuvas, and oh, by the way, let's make this point clear here. In the first case of the Mishnah, there was also a second get as well. Meaning it was a nice try that second round, but also it didn't work out. And so now there are, so she's coming to the Beis Din with two gittin and two ksuvas. And so now, how much is she going to collect? So, govish, take ksuvas. So the, under those circumstances, says the Mishnah, that she's going to now collect two ksuvas. So in the event that, that there was a second ksuva and now a second get. So basically what we're looking in at is the kicking in of ksuva number one and ksuva number two. By virtue of the fact that now they were married twice and divorced twice. So that means to say that the second ksuva is not viewed as a resumption of the first ksuva. If you wanted to just simply resume the first ksuva, what you would have done was just simply say, look, take out the first ksuva, dust it off. And let's reuse it again. In other words, I didn't pay you the ksuva, so let's reuse it again. Fine. So, but if there's shtei ksuvas and shtei gittin, so you have to pay now the two ksuvas. Right. However, shtei ksuvas v'get achad.
And you can marry her a third time.
You can marry her a third time if you
as long as she doesn't remarry.
Yeah, as long as she doesn't remarry. Shtei ksuvas v'get achad. So let's say the following circumstance, says the Mishnah, and this is obviously a contrasting case of the Mishnah, and that is that the husband divorces her the first time, and the and before the divorce, so he writes now actually two ksuvas. Okay, so he's writing a second ksuva. Why is he writing a second ksuva? Obviously, it's a basic question. Hold the question. We're going to try to explain that in the Gemara. However, shtei ksuvas veget achad, but if it's two ksuvas and only one get, oh, ksuva shnei getin, or let's say it's one ksuva and two getin, oh, ksuva veget v'misa, or let's say it's ksuva and get v'misa, eino gove el ksuva achas, in all of these cases, so you're only collecting one ksuva. Okay, let's try to break this down case by case. In case number one, so that's easy, shtei ksuvas veget achad. Again, I'm holding off on the basic question of why did you write a second ksuva? That's an obviously basic question, but there's only one marriage. Since there's only one marriage, so therefore either ksuva number one or ksuva number two is representing that one marriage, and therefore upon divorce, so you only pay once. Again, that second ksuva in this marriage, we're going to explain. In the second case of this series, so it's ksuva shnei gittin. So it's one ksuva and two divorces. Two divorces, what does that mean? It means, obviously, you divorced her and you remarried her. But what you did in the second marriage is probably what you should have done. And that is, assuming you haven't paid your first ksuva yet, just simply dust it off and recycle it now for the second marriage. Okay, recycling at its finest, if you will. And finally, the third case of the Mishnah is ksuva get misa. And that means to say that there's one ksuva, there's one get, and there's one death certificate. I use the word death certificate. He died. Yeah. Back in the day, it wasn't a death certificate. It was a de misa, regardless. In other words, verification that the husband, in fact, died. So, the ksuva get in misa, and we know that they were together before death. So that means to say that he married her twice. The first one ended in divorce, and the second time ended in death. You know, there's a cap in terms of how many times it can end in death, right? That's the nature of the business. So, eina govel ksuva achas. So again, because there's only one ksuva, so once again, what happened? We know what happened. And that was, is that after divorce, they tried again. And once again, they dusted off that ksuva, recycled it for that second marriage. And then the second marriage ended in death. In all of those circumstances, so even though there were multiple marriages, I say multiple marriages, it's one man, one woman. But because there were multiple marriages, no, let's say it better. There were multiple marriages, but because there was only one ksuva, so that was reflecting those multiple marriages, and you just simply recycled that ksuva, so then obviously the payment is only going to be one payment. So far, so good. And the Mishnah spells it out, because the ksuva was recycled. And when the ksuva is recycled, so good. So that means to say now that you only pay one ksuva payment. Okay, so as we are now starting the Gemara, on the bottom of Pei Tesam Beis, so e bai bahai gavya. So now we're looking at the Mishnah where there were multiple ksuvas, two ksuvas. So which one, and one get. All right, excellent, excellent clarification. So two ksuvas and one get. And now, which one is the collectible ksuva? So if you're reading the Mishnah, it sounds like she could choose. In other words, she's got two notes, and for whatever reason, the second one was written, and she could choose. Now, the Gemara says, now, if this is true, let me have it to you, if the Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, the Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. So the Gemara says, if this is true, it goes against the statement of Shmuel, which is, Shnei Shtar Zayosim B'Zachar Zeb. So let's say, it's either a sale contract or it's a loan, and it's a note reflecting the loan. And let's say multiple contracts reflecting the same sale, multiple notes reflecting the same note, the same loan. So what happens over here? So according to Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, I'll tell you what happens over here. And that is Bitul Sheni Sarishon. So what the second one is viewed as is basically a taking over of the first one. Meaning what you did is that you wrote the second one for whatever reason to knock out the first one. Okay? Maybe to have a new origination date of the loan. I'm just giving an example. But in other words, but you want the second one to knock out the first one. So so if that's true, so then now our Mishnah is against Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Because our Mishnah says that she's holding now two notes reflecting one marriage, and our Mishnah implies that she could use whichever one she wants to collect. And that goes against Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. So the Gemara says no. Lavit mar la mara papa. So, when we say that the second one is mevatel the first one, so you have to work with Rav Papa's modification or qualification, and that is, so the Gemara says as follows. What if the second one is not a facsimile of the first one? What if the second one is actually adding? So in other words, let's say it's a loan document and you want to add a little bit more money. Or let's say it's a sale document and you want to include more in the sale. So then you understand that the second one is not just a takeover of the first one. The second one is there for the osafa. Okay. And so, under those circumstances, now the second one is just for the purposes of Hosafa. So so over here in our Mishnah, you could say the same thing that in the second Ksuva. So what did he do in the second Ksuva? He added in the second Ksuva. So therefore, the second one is not just simply taking over the first one, and that's how you can align Rav Nachman and Amar Shmuel together with our Mishnah. Right. And I'm also just thinking out loud, meaning the second one is assume you can't predate it. Meaning when you write the second one is obviously going to operate with a later date, and that now gives her less opportunity to collect historically from properties that were sold. Okay. All right. Tanu Rabbanan. Hotzia get ksuva umesa. So, the Bryce over here says that we're dealing with, she has a get, she has a ksuva, and she also has a death certificate. So, im get, so as we turn to the top of Sadi Amad Alf, im get kodun le ksuva gova she ksuvas. Ksuva kodun le get, ena gova ela ksuva acha, shemagar she sisho ve echzira, amanas ksuva harishon ne echzira. So, the Bryce just simply tells us that, look, whether or not it's one ksuva collection or two ksuva collections, is just going to be a function of whether the get was kodem l'ksuva. Meaning, if the get was before the ksuva, so that means as follows. That means they got a divorce. This ksuva now is not reflecting that first marriage. Why? Because the date of the get is after the date, is before the date of the ksuva. So where is the ksuva of the first marriage? Don't know. And in this regard, don't care. Meaning, as we learned yesterday's daf, meaning she wants to collect her ksuva, so what does she need to bring into court? So it'd be great if she brought an ksuva, but she doesn't have to. Yesterday's daf was a bit complicated in terms of what proof and what evidence she needs to bring into court. But to just simply condense yesterday's discussion, if she brings her get into the courtroom, that's going to be enough in order for her to be able to collect her ksuva. And then what you do is you just simply mark up the get and say, this get was used for the collection of a ksuva, so that she won't repeat that again. So, with that stated, now she has a ksuva, and that ksuva now is after the date of the get, so what is this ksuva reflecting? A new commitment that he's making to her, if he was just recycling, so then he would have just used the ksuva of the first marriage. So, im get kodem l'ksuva, so then go v'shei ksuvas. However, if the ksuva is kodem as the get, however, I look at the date of the ksuva, and I look at the date of the get, and I see that the date of the ksuva is earlier than the date of the get. Okay, so now, we know what happened. And that is that they got married. He wrote her ksuva. They got divorced. They tried again. They got married again. And they recycled that ksuva. So when you recycle the ksuva, obviously that's only one ksuva obligation. Okay.
What did he write then?
He wrote it for the first marriage.
But he had already had one.
No. This is the one that he had from the first marriage.
Oh, that one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, one more Mishnah and one more Gemara to go in order to finish up here the ninth parak of the Masechta Kanchi. Siwa Aviv. So the Kutton gets married. Okay, now, immediately alarm bells should ring. In other words, what? Meaning a Kitana getting married, so that we see all the time. Now, how is a Kitana getting married? In other words, she's not a Bar Das. In order to get married, you need Das. So her father marries her off, as we've discussed already numerous times. And if in the absence of a father, the Chachamim are Misakin, that her brother or her mother can marry her off. So a katana getting married is ABCs, meaning that we see all the time. But that's not what our Mishnah is talking about. Our Mishnah is talking about a katan getting married. Now, there's no sponsorship of a katan, meaning the father is not providing the das for him. So how's the katan getting married? He's not. And I know that's strange, but he's not. In other words, to get married, a marriage is a kinyan. Marriage requires das. The katan's not getting married. So over here, I'm using the word sponsorship, but not in the same way that we used in the katana. In the case of katana, the father sponsoring her das, because the Torah allows that to happen. When the katan is getting married, the only sponsorship to talk about over here is just simply the financial sponsorship of the father saying, I'm backing the ksuva. I'm writing the ksuva, I'm backing the ksuva. Now, it's obviously really strange. It's a strange Mishnah, meaning because the son is not married. Okay, and is the Mishnah encouraging this kind of behavior? I don't know. I'm right. It's really just a tough Mishnah. But the point, I understand what the point of the Mishnah is, because the Mishnah is going to be very clear about what its point is. And that basically is that when is this boy slash man going to now have himself committed towards the ksuva, meaning his own ksuva? That's the point of the Mishnah. But just the basic question of, is the Mishnah condoning this? Is the Mishnah saying that this is acceptable? That part I'm really not clear about. Okay, but? Okay, good. Okay. So the Amisha Yanasu Shei Nashim, sorry. back up. Okay, so the ksuvas kayemis, says the Mishnah, because amenas kain. So the father wrote it while he was a katan, and so now now he grows up together with her. He becomes an adult with her. So what he's doing basically now is that he's taking ownership of that ksuva. That ksuva becomes his ksuva. So the Agirshin is Gairi Ishto Yimok Suvasakayem Shamanas King Kaima. And the same thing regarding Agir. Okay, Agir married right before he's Agir, obviously. So he was a Nachri. And he married a woman. And he wrote her Ksuva. Now, how does that work? Ksuva is just simply a financial obligation. Meaning, for sure, Nachri can write a Ksuva for his Nachriya wife. Meaning, if they want to borrow our idea of writing a Ksuva, it's a great idea. In other words, it does really connect the two of them. It does make him responsible for her. It does make him think twice before divorcing her, meaning it's a great idea, so they want to use it. Great. And then the two of them find Yiddishkeit, and the two of them convert, and now what? So can he just simply recycle that document as a ksuva, as a, you know, quote-unquote Jewish ksuva? 100%. Why not? Sure. That's those are the two points the Mishnah is making. Now, I'm Rav Huna Lo Shano Lamana Masayim. So the Gemara's comment over here is just simply, well, how much? Meaning, when you assume ownership of a ksuva that wasn't originally yours, isn't that funny? Like, in other words, out of context of today's daf, what a funny sentence, right? The ksuva was not originally yours, and now you grow into that ksuva. Like, what if outside of today's daf, if I ask you, what am I describing? If I ask myself that question, what am I describing? I would have no idea. And meanwhile, in our mission, we have two cases that describe that. One is when the boy gets married and his ksuv was sponsored by his father. And two, when the nachri gets married and obviously he got married as a non-Jew. And then after marriage, the two of them convert. And now what he wants to do is just simply now take ownership of that ksuva that was written by that other guy. That other guy was himself as a non-Jew. Okay, good. Right? Going forward in the Mishnah is great. Trying to work backwards in the Mishnah would be nearly impossible. Okay, anyway. So I'm Rav Huna. So the question of the Gemara here now is the following, and that is, how much ownership of the ksuva are you taking? Every detail in the ksuva, even the Tosefis, or maybe no, maybe just the Iker ksuva. Okay, so the Gemara, I'm Rav Huna, Loshana, Lamana, Masayim. Ava, Tosefis, Eilam. And Rav Yehuda, I'm Afilo, Tosefis, Yeshla. Machlokis, Amarayim. In terms of now, when you assume ownership of a ksuva that wasn't originally yours, are you assuming base of the ksuva, manim asayim, or are you assuming every detail, including Tosefis? The Amoraim debate. Meisve, the Gemara, quotes a Braisa. Chichu no tells much. Chichu in, lo chichu lo. So in the Braisa, so in our cases, meaning our Braisa is commenting on the two cases of our Mishnah. And that is that If, let's say, for example, after the boy grows up to becoming a man, so what does he do? What does he do? He's mechadish, meaning in addition to everything that already was committed on my behalf, which I'm now committing to, I'd like to add. So the diuk in the brisa is chichu in lo chichu lo. So ema af masha chichu. So the Gemara says no. Chichu could just simply mean as follows. He really assumes full responsibility of not only the base amount of the ksuva, but Tosefis as well. And then the brisa says chichu. It means on top of that. That's how we could read the brisa. Vahalo tanihachi. The Gemara says, okay, but I'm telling you that's not what the brisa says. So the Gemara says, look, I'm showing you a brisa, and the brisa here couldn't be any clearer. The brisa says that if the boy slash now man is mechadesh, so then he commits himself to the base and chiddush. Otherwise, the brisa says, otherwise, only mana masayim. Okay, so the Gemara says, you're right. Okay, so in other words, when you're assuming ownership of a ksuva that wasn't originally yours, so the only thing that you're assuming is the base amount of mana masayim. So in Rav Yehuda Masisa Natase, and now Rav Yehuda, the Gemara says, look, I get it. Meaning the brisa tells us that his position is not the accepted position. But at least I understand what got him to that point, and that is he read the Mishnah. The Mishnah misled him. Why? Because the Mishnah writes, when you look at the Mishnah and the language of the Mishnah, so in the Mishnah says ksuvasa kayemes, the ksuva sustained, meaning, and when you say the words the ksuva sustained, you mean the entirety of the ksuva sustained. That's what he thought. And the Gemara says velohi ayeka ksuva kai, and the Gemara says no, the word ksuva, it does not mean the entire ksuva, it just simply means the base amount of the ksuva. Adkan. Hajran lachakosev liishto, and that takes us to the end of the ninth parak of the Masechta, and now we begin this morning the tenth parak. Okay, the tenth parak of the Masechta, more discussion regarding ksuva, and now we're going to up the ante a little bit, and I mean that over here literally. So Misha ya nasu ishte nashim. So now he's married to two women. Okay, so we're right. So marba nechasa marba daiga, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So now, not only do you have one ksuva that you have to be concerned about, but you have two ksuvas now, obviously, that you have to be concerned about. And unlike what we learned just right now in the end of the ninth parak, where we're talking about recycling an old ksuva, obviously over here, each of your wives needs their own ksuva. So, Mishaya Nasu Ishtei Nashim Ameitha Rishana Kodemus Lishniya. Sorry, let me read that better, and let me punctuate better. Mishaya Nasu Ishtei Nashim Umeis. So now he's married to two women, and now he dies. So I have Rishona Kodemus Lishniya. So the Yorsha Rishona Kodemus Lishniya. Point number one of the Mishnah, and that is first mortgage, second mortgage. It's a really simple point in the Mishnah. And that is that the woman that was married to him first, she has what's called a first mortgage. In other words, those assets now of him are leaned and mortgaged against her obligation. So now being that she's the first wife, she has the first mortgage. And meanwhile, the second wife now is second in line. She has the second mortgage. And obviously in the first mortgage, second mortgage, so who collects first? So we all know the first mortgage collects first. And Yorshe Rishona are going to be collecting before Yorshe Shnia. Okay, so that's a really simple point of the Mishnah. Although I say it's a simple point, I know what's coming up in the Gemara. So hold that thought, although it seems to be a really simple point. Now, Nasa Esa Rishona Umesa, Nasa Shnia Umesu. Okay, now before we get to the second point of the Mishnah, should have, and I will now, just give us a little bit of an intro or preamble. Here's what we learned earlier in our Masechta. Let's review. Okay, a woman gets married to a man, so she's coming into the marriage with, so whatever assets are given to her by her father. It's called the Nidunya. Okay, now, what is the father going to give her into that marriage? Whatever he'd like to. We'd like him to give a lot, right? The Nidunya, we'd like to be a significant gifting from the father to his daughter to kickstart the marriage. Okay, but he's not incentivized. Why? Because in the back of his mind, he knows that in the event that my son-in-law is not only married to my daughter, but to marry to other daughters as well. So what's going to happen to all those assets that I put into the marriage? I'm going to give him a property, and now what? Now it's going to be distributed by grandchildren who are some of them mine, some of them not mine. Thank you. No, thank you. Okay, I'd rather not. So what the Chachamim were misakin was Ksufas ben Indichrin, if you remember. Ksufas ben Indichrin means that now any assets that he brings into the marriage are going to be written into the Ksuva and itemized. These are assets that were brought into the marriage via her father. And now, as the Ksuva, when he dies, and the Ksuva now is being collected, so before Yerusha, before the estate is divided, first order of business, and that is that you're going to satisfy Ksuva's ben indichrin, which means that her children, and only her children, are going to be receiving the appraised value of those assets that were written into the Ksuva. It's a quasi-Yerusha. It's not exactly a Yerusha, but it's a quasi-Yerusha. In fact, I'm very careful about the words I'm using right now to describe it as a quasi-Yerusha, as you'll see why in just a moment. Good. And then, by the way, the second wife, same story with her, meaning any assets that are brought into the marriage when she gets married to him, those assets also are going to be given only to her children and not distributed amongst all the children. Again, all this was a way of incentivizing fathers to be giving more assets to the daughters when they get married, giving them an assurance that it's going to stay, quote unquote, within the family. Good. Now, with all that stated, so what the mission wants to share with us is the following. Nasas Rishona. So here we go. Second half of the Mishnah. Nasas Rishona Umesu. Nasas Shnia Umesu. So he marries the first wife and she dies. Now marries the second wife and he dies. So what are we looking at over here? So we're looking at now two people who are quote unquote after the estate, right? The Yorshim of the first wife and the second wife principally. Now Shnia V'Yorsha Kodmim LeYorshei HaRishona. So the Shnia is now going to be coming before Yorshei Rishona. The Shnia is going to be coming before the Yorshei Rishona. Well, how? In other words, how is that working? Right? In other words, first mortgage, second mortgage, and now in the second half of the Mishnah? I'm so confused. What happened to first mortgage, second mortgage? Ah, so let's now unconfuse us. And that is that the second wife is collecting, she's collecting via what? As what? She's collecting as a creditor. And the children of the first wife are collecting their Ksuvas ben Indichrin. How is Ksuvas ben Indichrin being collected? As what? As Yerusha. As a state.
But don't they have their own Yerusha from the father anyway?
A separate issue. In other words, but we're just right now focused. Right. We're just focusing right now on Ksuvas ben Indichrin. So they're collecting Ksuvas ben Indichrin as a state. And we all know the rule, and that is that creditors get before the estate. In other words, the estate owes the creditors. So over here, it sounds a little bit strange, but it's not strange. Meaning it's not first mortgage, second mortgage. Over here, when she, the widow, who's the second wife, when she's collecting as a creditor. When the children of the first wife are collecting the Ksuvas ben Indichrin, they're doing so as Yerusha. Ah, so now the Mishnah makes perfect sense. In other words, their collection of Ksuvas ben Indichrin is only coming as Yerusha. Her, meaning the second wife, is coming as a creditor. Okay, creditors come first.
Also, the quality of the land is different.
It's a very fair point. Okay, could be as well. We're just right now, the Mishnah is only focusing on order and just talking about what is the normal sequence of order. So the Gemara says, okay, now I'm reading the Mishnah. If I'm reading it carefully, I'm back at the first point of the Mishnah, first mortgage, second mortgage. If I read the Mishnah carefully, it sounds like Rishona Kadma Lishniya. Now the first mortgage really should be first in line. But let's say second mortgage, the woman is aggressive and she takes. What it sounds like now is that it's not right, not nice, but it sounds like it works. So the Gemara says, Shmamina Bachov Meucha, Shekadim Vagava, Masha Gava Gava. So the Gemara says, okay, now you're dipping your toe into an extraordinarily controversial issue. And that is a second mortgage allowed to jump the line and take, even though the first mortgage hasn't taken yet? This is a point of debate, and significantly debate. The Gemara, we're going to be discussing it later on in our Masechta, we're going to be discussing it in Baba Kama. Okay, this is a hotly debated topic. And presumably our Mishnah now is weighing in on this. Why? Because our Mishnah is using the word kadma, which sounds like it's preferable.
Precedence.
Right? Precedence. But in other words, but the second one, if they're aggressive, they can go ahead and take. So the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, no. No. Kodemus over here could be read as, it's not just preferable, but no. First mortgage is first. Second mortgage is second. Kidinam ben kodem labas. So, and look, I'm going to show you a Mishnah Baba Basra. Ben kodem labas. Then when we were talking about order of Yerusha, the son comes before the daughter. Now, for a moment, are we going to entertain that if the daughter is aggressive and takes, she gets to keep it? Of course the answer is no. In other words, no, there's no way that the daughter gets to take before the son. She's not entitled, even though the mission uses the word kodem. Okay, good. So over here, same thing. Kodem over here, even though it sounds gentle, it's not gentle. First mortgage is first, second is second. Now, in a second version of the same exact discussion, but here, we're working on the opposite assumption. And that is that the Mishnah does not say, im kadmashnia v'tafsa in motziin miyada. That if the second one takes, so we do not take it away from her. It sounds like the Mishnah didn't say that, so it sounds like we would take it away from her. And if we do take it away from her, so then our Mishnah would then take the position of first mortgages first, period. Which again, it's controversial. So, aim lecha mashagava gava, and the Gemara says, no. Really, the truth of the matter is, the second mortgage, if they're aggressive, they get to keep it. And I did the Tani Shnei V'Yorsha, according to Yorsha Rishona. So, Tananami Rishona Kodemus L'Shnei. And it's only for the parallel languages of the Mishnah did the Mishnah employ that language. But the truth of the matter is that no, Mashagava Gavo. Okay, so what just came out now from the past Gemara is the following. Super interesting, and that is that when you have a first mortgage, second mortgage, can the second mortgage be aggressive and take? The answer is shouldn't. But if they do, do they get to keep it? So the Gemara says it's a machlokis, and I could read our Mishnah either as yes or no. Which means basically that we don't want to resolve the issue. We'd love to resolve it, of course. But we don't want to resolve the issue from our Mishnah because we know that this is such a hotly debated topic. Okay, if I can cook your noodle right now for just for just a moment. Okay, I'm basically presenting Tosus's question, which is as follows. Can we just for a moment entertain what we just got done discussing? I have a first in line, second in line mortgage. First mortgage, second mortgage. And so we know, of course, that the order, of course, is first, second, and second. Meaning everyone, hold your places in line. And for a moment now, the Gemara is entertaining the idea that if the second one goes ahead and takes first, so then what's taken is taken. Okay. Right. Tosu says, could you think about that for just a moment? What do we know? If you have a mortgage on a property and that property is sold to somebody, so what do you get to do? You have the first mortgage. So what do you get to do? You go to the buyer and say, look, I'm really sorry. In other words, he had no right to sell it to you. I'm holding a mortgage against it. And my mortgage predates your sale. So I'm going to go ahead and take it from you. Thank you very much. If the first mortgage holder can do that to a buyer of the property, you don't think the first mortgage can do it to the second mortgage? Meaning, right? It's such a strong question. How in the world are we even entertaining this idea that second mortgage can go and be aggressive and take it and keep it? Meanwhile, the first mortgage is taking it away from the kuchos. They're taking it away from buyers. They can't go to the second mortgage and say, look, my first mortgage obviously predates your second mortgage. Thank you very much. I'll take it back from you. Okay. It's a really strong question. I tell you, Tosus gives answers. You see the long Tosus over here, Shema Minah, where he asks this question and he gives answers. It's a really strong question. Okay. Good. Noodles are cooked. Let's move on. We're on Sadi Amud Beis. We are at the top of the Amud. And now we're at the second half of the Mishnah. So again, the second half of the Mishnah is there to present the following idea. I'm just resetting the idea of the second half of the Mishnah. And that is as follows. A man's married to a woman and she dies. And so now her children are coming to collect. They're coming to collect the ksuva, But even before that, they're coming to collect Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. Good. And now he marries a second woman, and he dies. So now, even though, obviously, her Ksuva is later than the first Ksuva, obviously, but she gets first. Why? Because she is collecting now as a creditor, and her children are collecting as Ksuvos Ben Indichrin, which is a quasi-Yerusha. And again, creditors come before estate. Even though, historically, the estate was there beforehand, but, okay, the estate is always there beforehand. Meaning, estate's going to, well, okay, whatever. The estate's going to, even if the estate's there before the creditor, but creditors get paid before the estate. And by the way, the easiest way to think about it is that just as the father owed the creditor, now that debt is passed along together with the estate. Meaning the estate is just simply a composite of all the debts that the father had. So that just simply rolls together with the estate. Okay, good. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. And therefore, oddly enough, the widow is now going to be able to take from the estate, even though that Ksuvos Ben Indichrin was there before the second wife. Okay, now, with that stated, Nasas Rishona. Okay, so what our Gemara is going to do now is look at our Mishnah and say, let's knock out 3 points that we can learn from the Mishnah. So Shema Mina Tla. So there really are 3 points to learn from the second half of the Mishnah, and that is number one. Shema Mina Achas Bechayv Achas Bemoso Yesh Lam Ksuvos Ben Indichrin Velo Chayshin Lein Suye. So first of all, Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. I might have thought Ksuvos Ben Indichrin would be in the following scenario. Ready? He marries a woman, he marries a second woman, and then he dies. Now, the estate is going down to the children, and the children now are going to, before dividing any dollar, a single penny, first and foremost, we're going to look at the ksuvas of their mothers, and look at the ksuvas ben indichrin, and under those circumstances, now, first and foremost, I take out that for my ksuvas ben indichrin, you guys take that for your mother's ksuvas ben indichrin, then we're going to divide the estate. Okay. But in our Mishnah scenario, I might have entertained. In other words, first she died, and the other woman didn't even die yet. And so therefore, you might have thought, let's not institute Ksuvos Ben Indichrin over here, because as you can imagine, a lot of fighting going on. In other words, I could see the fights happening. What in the world are you doing? You're taking off from the estate because of Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. Meanwhile, the other woman's still alive. Okay. The point is that Ksuvos Ben Indichrin is legislated, even in this scenario of our Mishnah, even if we're talking about where one woman died and the other one still survived. Okay, that's number one. Mimai. Midiktani shneva yosha kodim liyosha yishana miktam hu dekadme. So ha'ika shakli. So the Gemara says is that, look, our Mishnah is just simply saying that we're talking about order. Meaning that the widow is going to be coming before Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. But obviously, if there's plenty of estate to go around, enough to satisfy both her and Ksuvos Ben Indichrin, so then the estate will satisfy both. Meaning that Ksuvos Ben Indichrin is going to be even in a case where the other wife is still alive. Okay, good. That's point number one. Good. That one's easy. Now it gets a little bit harder for points number two and three. Shmamina, point number two, Ksuva Nasas Mosel Chaverta, and that is the Ksuva is going to be Mosel Chaverta. Okay, now how is the Ksuva being collected as a debt? Meaning Ksuva's debt, and the Ksuva is being collected as debt. So the in order to understand this point, let's first review a halacha that we learned earlier in the Masechta, but we need to know it right now again. The truth of the matter is we need to know this all the time, but you ask your typical, your typical, they're not going to know this. This is, but if you're holding in Ksuvos, so then we're going to know this. Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. Okay, so let's go over a simple, I'll throw out numbers just to make everything as simple as possible. Okay, so a man was married to two women and he left an estate of $1,000. Okay. So, and now each set of children of each of the wives are coming now to collect the estate. But before we do so, Ksuvos Ben Indichrin. I turn to my mother's Ksuva. And they turn to their mother's tzuva. And the first thing that we're going to do now is divide through the estate. First and foremost, tzuva's been indifferent. Now, my mother's tzuva had how much as an adunya? $500. Your mother's tzuva had $500. Okay, great. So I'll take $500 and you'll take $500 and shalma yisrael. Now, happens to be I give the silliest example because everyone got half, but it doesn't matter. It's still going to highlight the following. What are we going to do under those circumstances? We're calling off ksuvah's ben indichrin. We're calling it off. Why are we calling it off? Because there's nothing left. Ksuvah's ben indichrin cannot trump Yerusha. The only time that the Chachamim legislated, instituted ksuvah's ben indichrin is only if there is Yerusha remaining. I mean, because ksuvah's ben indichrin is a takana derabanan. And that's not going to be able to override a Yerusha de Araisa. So the only time ksuvah's ben indichrin is going to be taking effect is only if there's money left over. So let's do the same example, but instead of 1,000, let's do 1,000 plus one dinar. Okay. I'm mixing and matching my currencies. It's okay. It's still going to make the same point. And now these kids are going to take 500. Those kids are going to take 500. There's a dinar left of Yerusha. Check. Now ksuvah's ben indichrin can take effect because there's still a significant amount, and significant just simply means one dinar, which ain't a lot, but still, as long as we can be mekayim the mitzvah of Yerusha, so now we get a big check, a big fat check. Okay, good. That's already what we knew and what we're supposed to know right now. Now let's ramp up the chiddush. Let's say there is surplus. It happens to be that there's also an outstanding obligation. And now let's say that there is surplus, but a creditor is demanding rightfully that surplus. Now, so can we use that and can we call that the Mosar Dinar necessary in order so that we can that we can institute Ksuvah's Ben Indichrin? Let me put the question in other terms. Does the surplus have to actually be divided amongst the children, or there just simply has to be surplus? Either happens to be a creditor who's going to help himself to that surplus. Okay, it happens. Okay, so the Gemara says Shmamina, and that's exactly what the Gemara now is litigating from our Mishnah, because Shmamina achas bechai v'achas b'moso yeshlem. No, I'm sorry, I read that already. So Shmami, now we're up to number 2. Ksuva nasas mosar lechaverta. So the ksuva is going to be viewed as mosar. Again, the ksuva of the second wife is, she's a creditor. That's debt. And we can view it as mosar. And we're still going to institute ksuva's ben indichrin. So mimai midalokhtani im yesh mosar dinar. And how do I know that? Because I'm reading the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't mention anything about im yesh mosar dinar. Why? Because we're qualifying the ksuva of the second wife. We're qualifying the widow's ksuva as mosar. Because she's coming as a creditor. She's not inheriting it. And so therefore it qualifies as mosar. So the Gemara says, great. Shmami na. And now, that was number 2. What about point number 3? Ksuva's ben indichrin, so lo tafa mi mishamte. So the ksuvas ben indichrin are not going to be taken from mortgage properties. The isakadacha tarfim mimishabde leisiv v'lechufinu levnei shnia. So the why not have the children of the first wife just simply go ahead and say, look, we are entitled to ksuvas ben indichrin, and we're going to go over now to quote unquote mortgage properties, because though they were mortgage properties, mortgaged against the second ksuva, and thank you very much, we're going to take it back. Oh, okay, fine. And the Mishnah doesn't say that, because ksuvah's ben indichrin can only be taken from properties that are on hand, holdings of the father, but not properties that were satisfying an obligation. Oh, okay, fine. So masik of Rav Ashi mimai. So Rav Ashi says, I don't know. So Rav Ashi says, I'm just gonna push back on everything we just said, all three chidushim of the Mishnah. Rav Ashi says, I'm gonna push back. First of all, achas b'chay v'achas b'moso, where we observed in our Mishnah, we're still gonna institute l'ksuvas ben indichrin. Rav Ashi says, I don't think so. So I'll tell you that no. that if one wife survived and the other wife has not survived, we're not going to institute ksuvas ben indichrin, knowing that this is going to lead to a battle royale. And as far as our Mishnah is concerned, when our Mishnah says kodmin, kodmin just simply says nachla. So it just simply means in terms of the estate. Meaning the estate is going to be divided, but before the estate gets divided, so satisfy the creditors. And oh, by the way, one of the creditors happens to be the second wife. That's all. And v'chitem yorshe rishona lamali. So if that's true, then why mention yorshe rishona? Meaning, isn't the whole point of mentioning yorshe rishona to highlight suvas ben indichrin? No, the Gemara says no. I did the tani shniyah v'yorshe tani nami li yorshe rishona. Again, just for parallel structure in the Mishnah uses the words Yorshe Rishona, but not to highlight the point of Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. Okay, so that's number one, says Rav Ashi. Number two, Udika Amar Ksuvanasas Mota Lechaverta Dimalola Mem Lechaim Ksuvanasas Mota Lechaverta Vachudika Moser Dinar. And then your second Chiddush is that we, in order to institute Ksuvas Ben Indichrin, there has to be a Moser Dinar. And even if that Moser Dinar is going to be collected by a creditor, that still qualifies as Moser Dinar. Maybe you're wrong. Maybe it's not true. Maybe any monies that are taken by creditors do not qualify as Moser Dinar. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is talking about that after the wife collected her ksuva, there was, in addition to that, Moser Dinar. Okay, that could be. And then finally, number three, Achas Bechayev, Achas Bechayev, Achas Bemoso, Tanaihi. No, that's it. I'm sorry. V'achas b'chay v'achem mamosa tanaihi d'tanya. And the Gemara says that, look, this idea of suvas ben indichrin is even in a case where one wife is dead and the other one survived. The Gemara says it's machlokas tanaim. How do I know that? D'tanya, because of the following brisa. Meisu achas b'chay v'achas mamoso. So let's say the wives died. One while he was alive. One after the husband died. So ben nanas omer yecholim bnei rishon alomer levnei shnia bnei balas chov atem. So the bnei rishon can say to the bnei shnia, look, you are a creditor, and tluk ksuvas imchem utzu. So what you'll do now is that you'll take the ksuva, and that's it. In other words, but that's it. In other words, but you're just simply coming as creditors. And Rabbi Kiva Omar, Kvar Kafta Nachla. So the Milifnei Bnei Arishona, V'nafla Lifnei Bnei Ashniya. And so, and Rabbi Kiva says no. The first ones are creditors. I'm sorry, the second ones are creditor. That part's true. But the first ones are Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. What is Ksuvas Ben Indichrin? Yerusha. And again, like we learned in our Mishnah, what happens in Yerusha is that creditors take from the Yerushim. Okay? So my love, Akamifligi, Mar Savar, Achas Bechai, Achas Mamos, Yesham, Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. And ostensibly, presumably, this is a machlokas. Meaning that we're describing a case where one wife predeceases him and one wife deceases after him. And whether or not we're going to institute Ksuvas Ben Indichrin in such a case. According to Benanas, we will. And Umar Savar Achas Bechai, Achas Bemos, Eilem Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. And according to Rabbi Kiva, we're not going to institute Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. So Amar Rava Ashka Chatin Al Rabban Debe Rav Diasavik Amre Dekule Amar Achas Bechai Achas Mamos Yeshlem Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. So no. So the Rabbi says no. I was in the base measures. We discussed this very point, and no meaning that in the event that one wife predeceases him and the other wife post deceases him, we're still going to institute Ksuvas Ben Indichrin. In other words, again, Ksuvas Ben Indichrin is to incentivize fathers to give more nedunya into the marriage. And so therefore, doesn't matter who ends up dying first. In the event that we're talking about division of the estate, when the estate is getting divided, the first thing that we're going to turn to is the nedunya in both ksuvas and give that. Even in this case, where one of the wives is still surviving. And v'hacha b'ksuva nasas mosel chaverta v'uadin labal chov kemiflegi. And as far as Benanis and Rabbi Kiva, what they're arguing about? They're arguing about the second point that we just got done litigating. And that is that there is surplus, but that surplus is just somebody's debt. And is going to be collected by a creditor. So can that qualify as surplus? That's the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Benanis. So Marzav Ksuva Nasas Mosul Chaverta, that would be the sheet of Benanis. V'uadin Labachov. Marzav Ksuva Nasas Mosul Chaverta V'uadin Labachov. Good. That's how they understood the machlokis. And v'amina ana lahu, but Rabbi says, good, that's how they were saying in the base medrash. However, what I said is, bebalchov kulam lo pligi d'ave mosar. No, I think surplus money, even though it is indebted, even though it's going to be collected from a creditor, I view that as surplus. I think Sufas ben Dichren will be instituted under those circumstances. And keep ligi big suva. So I think that the machlokis is regarding ksuva, meaning whether or not we're going to institute and legislate ksuva's been indifferent under these circumstances. So, okay, good. So basically, we have a machlokis between Rabbi Kiva and Benanas in terms of where one wife predeceases him and the other wife deceases after him, and whether or not, in other words, we know they argue about this situation, what they're arguing about. The Amoraim are arguing about what the machlokis tanaim is, based on basically what we just got done discussing. So, on the way that it was presented, the Gemara says, I don't like the language, right? This is Rav Yosef's point. I don't like the language. Rav Akiva says, Kvar kafsa nachla, right? The nachla already kicked in. So, im yesh moser dinar mibayelei. In other words, if the whole issue is surplus, why don't we see that in the Braisa? Elam Rav Yosef, achas b'chai, achas mamosa kemiflegi. So the Gemara says, okay, so Rav Yosef says, I'm back. Meaning, I'm back to explaining that the machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Benanas is exactly this. Ksuvas ben indichrin. Is it going to be instituted in the case where one wife predeceases him and the other wife survives him? And are we going to institute ksuvas ben indichrin? Yes or no? That's machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Benanas. And what would be the argument to say that we're not going to institute it? Because it's gonna lead to real fighting. In other words, because the children of the first wife who predeceased the husband are now collecting extra Yerusha over the other children who are not collecting Yerusha. Obviously, that could lead to a lot of fighting. Are we going to institute Ksuvas ben Indichrin under those circumstances? Yes or no? That's the machlokas. Okay, good place to stop. Let's just quickly recap our daf today. We finished the ninth parak of the Masechta, so we covered two topics at the end of the ninth parak. Number one, recycling a ksuva. Can you recycle a ksuva? Sure. In other words, you married a woman, you divorced her, you want to try again. Okay, good. Look, I didn't end up paying your ksuva yet. You want to just recycle the ksuva? Sure. Let's take two on the whole marriage. So good. So now, in the event that he has to pay the ksuva, in other words, death or divorce, so he only pays her one ksuva. If for whatever reason he writes her a second ksuva for that second marriage, okay, so then he commits himself to a second ksuva. Okay. That was point number one. Point number two, and the last Mishnah, is that what happens when the ksuva wasn't yours and it becomes yours? Like I said earlier, had I not had the Mishnah, I never would have guessed what we're talking about. So let's say a minor gets married, a minor boy gets married, And the ksuva is coming via sponsorship of his father. And then he becomes an adult and he grows into the ksuva. So fine, so now he assumes the ksuva. What is he assuming? Base amount or even the Tosefis as well? Machlokas, but the Gemara concludes he's only assuming base amount. Same thing when a ger, right? As a non-Jew, he marries a woman, he writes her ksuva. Again, he likes the idea, he writes her ksuva. And now he and his wife convert and they just want to assume the ksuva. So again, only the base amount, not the Tosefis. Good. That was the end of the ninth parak. In the beginning of the tenth parak today, we discussed two basic topics. Number one, first mortgage, second mortgage. And that is that we're doing it in the case of wives, but of course it's true by any series of creditors. So the first wife is the first holding the first mortgage, and the second wife is holding the second mortgage. And now what do we learn in our Mishnah? First mortgage is first. Second mortgage is second. Gemara deliberates on this point, whether or not the second mortgagee is really aggressive and goes and takes to satisfy his mortgage. Is that okay? Is that acceptable? Major machlokas. We read our Mishnah to go in either possible direction, and it goes without saying, and Tosfos articulates this very point. It's really hard to understand how the second mortgage can go ahead and preempt the first mortgage. That's very difficult to understand. If the first mortgage, I'm just repeating Tosus's question, such a powerful question. If the first mortgage can take from Lekuchos, you don't think the first mortgage can take from the second mortgage? Okay. But that was number one. And then number two, and obviously the much more difficult discussion of today's daf, is that what happens in the event that man's married to two wives, one of his wives predeceases him, and then he predeceases a second wife. What happens under those circumstances regarding ksuvas benin dichrin? Are we going to have both children being able to collect ksuvas benin dichrin? The answer in our Mishnah seems to be yes, but because the second wife is still alive, first and foremost, she's going to be taking her ksuva. Her collection of her ksuva is coming as debt. She's a creditor to the estate. And so even before we can have a discussion of ksuva's been indifferent, first creditors have to be satisfied. She's a creditor, and therefore she's going to get her ksuva. Good. And then if anything's left, so then that's going to go to the estate. And is that also now with anything left? Are we going to employ ksuva's been indifferent? The answer seems to be yes. There were three major takeaway points from our Mishnah. Number one, do we institute ksuvas ben indichrin in such a scenario? Our Mishnah seems to indicate yes. Number two, are we going to institute ksuvas ben indichrin when the moser, when the surplus money is spoken for, i.e., there is a creditor out there who is entitled to receive that moser? Can that still qualify as moser in order to institute ksuvas ben indichrin? Our Mishnah seems to indicate yes. Again, a controversial point. And finally, a third point of consideration from our Mishnah. Is that ksuvas ben indichrin is lo tarfe mimishavde. Ksuvas ben indichrin cannot be taken from properties that were mortgaged that others held mortgages against. In other words, if anyone's collecting those properties as satisfaction of the mortgages, you can't, with your ksuvas ben indichrin, go ahead and take those properties. Good. Adkan.